Today on the podcast, I am excited to share with you a fun conversation I had with a new friend of mine, Dr. Sarah Michaud. She is a clinical psychologist who has worked in the addiction field for 30 years. She recently published a book called Co-Crazy, One Psychologist's Recovery from Codependency and Addiction, a memoir and manual for freedom. She has been sober for almost 40 years and brings her humor, directness, compassion, and insight to support folks in recovery. We talk all today about codependency with the self-leadership lens. It was a delightful conversation. I know I'm going to spark a deeper friendship with this woman. She is incredible. She recently launched a YouTube channel called Leaving Crazy Town with her sober attorney buddy, Finn. They discuss all things codependency and addiction while having lots of laughs. Welcome to season 5 of the Wellness as a Way of Life podcast, the less is more source of wellness, knowledge, wisdom, and inspiration for female leaders and founders. Here, we teach you why not all wellness trends are for you, how to figure out which ones are, and how to best adapt them for your own personal wellness toolbox. Ultimately, we need to know how to integrate your wellness practices so fully that they become to feel like brushing your teeth, a foundational part of who you are and not a checkmark on your to-do list. I'm your host, Megan Swan, creator of the Wellness as a Way of Life community and the Sustainable Integrated Wellness Approach. I have more than a decade of experience in the wellness industry and on my own personal journey. Learning how to tune into and trust my intuition and drown out all the noise. As a certified health coach, detoxification expert, plant-based chef, yoga teacher, and consultant, I will help you distill down the information overload and feel more confident and at ease in your own skin. This season, some of the topics we are focusing on are self-care being essential to self-leadership and leadership, holistic preventative health fundamentals for women as we age, sober curiosity, especially when it comes to optimizing yourself for entrepreneurship, ancient wisdom of cacao and consuming superfoods that are sustainably produced, and finding more pleasure in the patterns and beauty of it all. Here, we know that in order for health and wellness to be sustainable, we need a less is more approach, leaving the information overload and tips overwhelm behind. So take what you love and leave the rest. Let's swan dive in. Welcome back to Wellness as a Way of Life. I'm so excited today to be here with my friend, Dr. Sarah Michaud. She is an expert in many things, but specifically codependency. And we're going to talk about the intersection of codependency and self-leadership for powerful women. So welcome. How are you, Sarah?
Yeah. Thanks. Great to be here. Thank you so much, Megan. I love talking about codependency because I think most people don't know what it means. And I think so many women struggle with it, but they don't even know what it is. So it's great to be here.
So let's jump in there. Like, let's define terms. What is it?
Okay. So to me, I mean, I could talk about the origins and in the 70s and all the people that wrote about codependency. And, you know, the original idea was a housewife married to a male alcoholic. That was how it started. But really, you know, I've been in a psychologist for 30 years. I've been sober for 40 years. And what happened to me is when I was like 20 years sober, I was married and my husband relapsed and my life imploded. And I think what occurred to me is that here I was working in addiction. You know, I worked at a famous psych hospital. I'm sober myself. I'd been going to Al-Anon for 20 years because I worked with so many people and I grew up in alcoholism. And yet I was overwhelmed with the situation. And I think I realized at that moment, man, if I struggle with this stuff and I have all this training and all this experience, then most women struggle with this stuff. So that's how it kind of originally, like, I really started doing a deep dive. And, you know, the other thing is I work with mainly women you know, because mainly women come to therapy. And two things that I realized over and over and over again that were themes, and these were powerful women. I mean, you know, women who are drinking to cope very often are. Mm-hmm. But the thing that blew my mind is the two common themes were they couldn't speak up, they couldn't say their truth, and they couldn't set boundaries with their kids, their partners, their bosses. And to me, to see these women who I thought were so amazing, and yet they were crippled to be who they really are, was surprising to me. And yet that's what happened to me. So I could totally relate. And so I started really looking at what is that about? Why? To me, the definition of codependency is this: not being able to be who you really are. Mm. You know, that's really it, period, at the end, right? And
like you almost described like 95% of women in North America at the very least, right?
Exactly. And that's why I wrote the book, because I mean, we could talk about this forever, but I grew up with four brothers, a very successful dad and an alcoholic mother. So women in my household, like I tell this, it's not really a joke, but my father would give tests at the dinner table sometimes. And I wasn't even included because women weren't smart. I mean, the sexism and the, you know, women being small, and my job was to clean the dinner table and do the dishes. I mean, that's, I'm 64. So that was my upbringing. But the training that we don't have anything to say is so rampant. And I think today's generation, I mean, it's a lot different now, but the unconscious and the fears. And that's what I get to in my book and do a lot in my work in my groups with folks, is what are the underlying fears, and not fears like fear of snakes or, the dark or whatever, but I'm talking about interpersonal fears, fear of what other people think of you, fear of people getting upset with you, fear of not looking good, fear of rejection, fear of not being liked, fear of not being loved, fear of someone getting mad at you. Like all those interpersonal fears are really the core of codependency. And that stuff is created, you know, in the first 5 years of your life, 5 to 10 years of your life. And, you know, I don't know if this is true, but this is what I was taught, that there are two fears you're born with, the fear of loud noises and the fear of falling, you know, genetically and evolutionary wise. And so most of the fears that we have are from some interaction with usually our primary caretakers. Mm-hmm. So if my mother, and, you know, going from small things to huge things, like I had a client once who came home from school really excited about this project she did. And her mom was super busy, had a bunch of other kids, was cooking dinner, and said, "Mom, look at this, look at this." And the mother just turned around and said, "I don't have time for that." And of course, it's not personal to the child because it's about the mother. But the kid was devastated, and that shut her down for years, just in that one tiny interaction. So when you think about that, if those interactions and then those fears are in our bodies now and in our feeling states, and then our thought life is a result of those fears, that's going to keep us quiet. And that's why, to me, this is such big work. And again, I almost want to take out the word codependency. And I mean, I call the book Co-Crazy just because most people, I call it Co-Crazy because most people in relationships where they think they're the problem feel crazy. And mm-hmm. they often, you know, women often come to therapy because of relationship conflict. That's why we go to therapy usually. And very often they're like, "I just feel crazy. I don't know what's wrong. I just feel off." And usually what feeling crazy means is I'm enraged.
Yeah.
So when a woman feels that way, it, to me, it's much more comfortable for a woman to feel anxious than angry. And very often when I see women who've had panic attacks, a history of panic attacks or anxiety, when we back it up to when that started, it's usually something really pissed them off. So I'm saying that, you know, obviously that's not for everybody and there's unique circumstances. But yeah, I've said a lot. So, you know, I don't know what else I could go. Yeah, well, I mean, so many topics.
I'm hearing like a lot of my, you know, we tend to hear our own story and things. Absolutely. But yeah, I actually defaulted quite early on to anger instead of being anxious. And had a lot of bad results in my life, I think, because I was read as the bitch versus, you know, sad or depressed or anxious or, you know, like trying to people please.
Yes.
And so I think so many women, I feel like there's a conversation being had, at least in some circles, you know, to befriend your rage and, you know, get curious at the very least and understand that it's boundaries being crossed, whether it's emotional or physical, spiritual, all the things. And yeah, like, I feel like this, for me, I mean, not that I'm in any perfect place by all means, but it's been an evolution, I'd say, over the last 10 years. And then my sobriety goes back almost 6 come March.
Yep.
And just, you know, the unraveling and feeling more at ease with who you are.
Yes.
More able to actually just show up that way. And to me, this is all deeper parts of embodied leadership, you know, where you're not acting out what you think leadership is. You're just showing up and feeling safe, at least in your own judgment of yourself, or however you want to describe that. You know, like you're okay. You know, you're never going to please everyone. And I've come to just to find these tools, one of them being like, okay, that situation I'm enraged about. Why?
Yes.
No?
Yes.
Is there anything I could do about it? No. Okay. How can I channel this into something productive and not let it eat me inside?
Oh, you said so many great things. Yeah. I mean, first of all, I really see when you talked about just, I was angry and not, you know, that's the way I survived. You know, I really see a lot of these coping / adaptive behaviors, right? So when we're kids, we're brilliant. We figure out, okay, this is happening in my house. And to feel safe and to feel okay, I'm going to do these certain things. So I'm either going to shut down, or I'm going to act out, or I'm going to get angry, or I'm going to people please, or I'm going to manipulate, or I'm going to avoid, or I'm going to hide out, whatever it is, whatever your adaptation skills are to feel safe or brilliant as a kid. The trouble is, when we grow up and we evolve and kind of leave our homes, we're still using those adaptation skills. And they don't usually get us what we want. So if I'm enraged all the time and I'm, say, trying to have relationships, right, they're not going to really work out well. And the other thing is, and I do this a lot with my groups too, I have a way, because I believe, and I don't know if you believe this, that like 99% of the time you're activated is not about the present moment, right? So if I get into an activation, I get upset, I have a process where I'll kind of ask several questions and we'll get to what got activated. So for example, I'll give an example of, you know, talking to this one. I remember talking to this publishing attorney who was like this really arrogant woman. And when I talk to arrogant people, like, I can get activated because of my family. And I went to prep school and all that shit. And I grew up, you know. Mm-hmm. Anyways, so she was very, like, dismissive. And I handled the phone call, but I got up and I was freaking enraged. And I called my friend up and I go, what is happening? And it was all that stuff I was just talking about. So I always look at my first question when I'm enraged is, what does this situation remind me of? And what fear got activated, right? So someone dismissing me had reminded me of early experiences where I was dismissed. And then the fear is fear of not being heard, fear of not being seen, fear of not being valued. Fear, you know, all these fears got activated. And then I do this process where I look at, okay, what are my old ways that I've managed this fear? You know, which maybe, you know, years ago on the phone, I would have hung up on her or something. And what do I do now that helps me with the fear? Okay, I can be kind. I don't want to have to call her and make an amend tomorrow. you know, whatever. So I'm going to kind of work through this. I'm going to notice my bodily sensations. I'm going to repeat to myself that it's not about her. And really, how you know that, I always say, if there's this, for me, it's this activation in like my chest where I'm just like feeling like I need to do something immediately. And that usually means it's about the past. And, you know, if I'm just a little irritated or upset, you know, that's different. But I use the term activation because that's the sign that something old is happening. And then I can look back, I can use my coping skills. Like, say, if you're a leader and you're doing a meeting and you're at a big company and you're activated by someone in the audience, you know, you don't want to take that out on your audience, right? So it's really a good skill to learn. How can I manage this right now and then resolve it later so I don't have that activation at another point? So yes, you know, you're right. Like when you get angry when you're 5 or 6 and that's your skill to just push people away, it's great. But then it's figuring out what's the cost. And usually the cost is my connection to other people and my connection with myself. Those are the costs, which are big. And those are the costs of codependency. Because codependency is really all about, I'm going to rely on the external world to feel okay myself, rather than I need to love myself, be okay with myself now. And if other people reject me, that's fine too. You know? So,
go ahead. Which I mean, like, it is how girls are socialized, right? It's like,
amen.
Look to the external to make sure everybody else is okay for sure first, maybe only. And yes. I mean, that really speaks to me. I think mine, I have like a deep, I like how you say that that's an activation, because I think it's true. Like when you, you know, you shouldn't react in the moment, it's probably a good sign that
this isn't
about like what you're reacting to in this moment of time. I think we've all mistakenly reacted poorly, and you learn from those interactions. To me, it's like the dismissed, or when someone's insulting my intelligence, which, I mean, I've recently come to think, like, I really grew up with this, and I don't know if it was just me or it was somewhat modeled somewhere.
Yes.
Where it's like this defense mechanism to, like, well, one, we all like to be right, right? Somehow we feel better when we're right, opposed to, that's more of an ego thing. But this hierarchy, it's like, oh, well, we're not, you know, that person isn't intelligent in this area. And there's somehow like a moreover feeling, which just isn't productive, certainly in relationships or bringing, in healing, it's not productive.
Well, absolutely. And the thing is, so funny you say that, because I spoke to a group the other day and I said, these fears are so amazing because of that dinner table experience. So I always thought I was dumb, you know, and even getting a PhD, the thing is, doesn't take away the fear of being dumb. If you don't find the origin, you know, that's the thing. These fears can lead us to have great successes, you know, or these insecurities. But the thing is, it doesn't take away the insecurity unless you do the work to get to the source. The source is, growing up, people didn't think I was smart, didn't value women, and all the boys were valued, you know, and still that old fear can get activated sometimes, you know, but I know it's like when you get, and I always use the word spaciousness, because I really believe if we can get way more spaciousness with our thinking and know that they're just thoughts, they're not reality, like that thought of not being smart is from the past. Like we're just like these computers that have kind of got all this data from our upbringing, but it's not necessarily true. In fact, most of it isn't true. You know, it's just training. So,
For me, one thing that's been helpful over the years is, you know, like sort of, like you said, calling it out, you know, this is, it's not this individual that I'm reacting to. And then like going into the body in that moment, like just focusing more on the physical experience. It's like, where am I activated? Is it like a burning sensation? Is it tension? Right. You know, just start to know your own patterns and, you know, there you start to identify them quicker and quicker and be like, oh, this is that little sore spot. And, and then I think not having like a negative narrative about the fact that you have this fear is important too. It's like, this added layer that then women have of self-judgment.
It's judging.
Like, oh, well, I have, you know, I'm offended when someone insults my intelligence. Well, there's nothing wrong with that. It's more like the more I bring it in and get closer and curious, and the more I can help other people find an inner peace with this same sort of battle, but it doesn't go away.
No. And the mantra, which is really kind of hard for people to get, the mantra of codependency recovery is, I'm not responsible for anybody else's thoughts, feelings, or behaviors. I'm only responsible for mine. And the other thing is, which is really hard for people to get, is everything that comes out of someone's mouth is about them. So if someone dismisses me when I'm in this work and it's really in my body, I know that it's just whatever. It's about them. They feel insecure. You know what I mean? And the more I practice that and notice, like you say, notice what's happening in my body, which is my history. You know, that's what I can be responsible for. But what they're saying to me is really about them. So I just, like, arrogance, for example, to me is just a defense. So the more arrogant someone is, the more highly defended they are. So I can see that now and have more compassion. But you're right. It's when I say to someone, hey, what they say is none of your business. They're like, what do you mean? It's not my business. Of course it's my business. Not really. You know, because that's, again, that comes from there. And think of them with just this trail behind them of their history. And everything that's coming out of their mouth is from that. You know, I had this client once, I was telling this story, I know we're going to run out of time, but there's a gal I've sponsored for like 25 years, and she's this gorgeous, you know, thin, blonde, you know, gal, right? But she doesn't perceive herself that way. She thinks she's overweight. She thinks she's, because of her mother was super critical, blah, blah, blah. So recently she went on a date and the guy didn't call her. And this, like, freaking, I mean, sent her into a spiral. And I was telling her this story because I said, it's not, you know, no matter what I said, she's got to go do that work. But I kept saying, that's about his history, whatever. Maybe he doesn't like blondes or whatever. And I told him this, heard this story about a client, this guy who was in his 30s, and he was engaged to this gorgeous woman, this strawberry blonde woman. They'd been dating a couple of years, and he came to see me because he was in conflict. And he said, Sarah, I don't know what's wrong with me. He said, I don't have a thing with blondes. Like, blondes don't do it for me, but I've been dating this woman. I'm engaged because I love her, but there's something really off about this. So we kind of did this whole deep dive around, well, what are his attractions? He said, I'm always attracted to women with dark brown hair. And I said, okay, well, where do you think that come from? Anyways, we do this whole deep dive. You know who it was? The cartoon Betty Boop. Because when he was starting to feel his sexual energy, he was looking at these cartoons with the big breasts. So literally, think about that. Think of that situation. This is a guy who's always been attracted to a certain type of man because of a cartoon character. And now his partner, who's this phenomenal being, is not attractive to him because of that. Now, believe me, she's going to take that personally. But is that about her?
No.
So it's just like, those are these extreme examples of trying to, like, let women know that you can only, like, really be responsible and empower yourself and be around people who can empower you. But when you're rejected, and this is a big one. And I know, and the woman I work, you know, my sponsee, you know, she's worked through that because of her own history. But it's like, it's so not about her. I mean, because I could see her as this dynamite woman, right? But one rejection can send her back in that spiral. And that's how powerful this stuff is. You know, it's how powerful the wounds are. Anyways.
Yeah. I think, like, kind of bringing it back around, it's having these tools and understanding that it's a practice. It's showing differently. It's talking to yourself differently, changing the internal dialogue, knowing that you need to go reach out to somebody who's going to bring you back to center. And you're not going to solve this in a year of therapy.
No. No, and what you said is great. No, a really great tool is reality checking, because the problem is we can get into super delusional thinking and our perceptions can be really inaccurate. So calling someone who knows you well and say, hey, let me run this by you. Does this make sense to you? You know, to get someone else's perception really helps. Great tool. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I love, you said the word empower. And I think sometimes that's misunderstood in that, in the current patriarchal world.
Yes.
Power, like power over.
Right.
But really, I think when we're talking about codependency, it's like taking your power back and not letting all these external things dictate your inner world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what I was going to say too is, and I've kind of lost my train of thought, taking your power back. Oh, and having compassion for yourself. I mean, this is the other thing. Women are so freaking hard on themselves. It's like, you know, you're supposed to be a mom and have three kids and a full-time job. And then you're supposed to go to, you know, the PTA at night or whatever. It's insane the amount my women clients, like, it's shocking to me. And it's like, no wonder you're exhausted and upset and angry and can't set boundaries and all this stuff. So to me, having compassion for yourself, and this sounds so trite, but saying, would I treat my best friend this way, you know, gives you a reality of like, wow, how much am I doing? This is insane. Like, really, the gentleness for self is so important. Yeah. Yes. Really, Kate.
I think it's perfect that there. Is there anything else you kind of want to add in terms of, you know,
to call
the friend, more self-compassion, you know, try and be a little bit more in your body in that moment and not react or overreact from an activation that probably has nothing to do with back experience and time.
The pausing. I mean, I always talk, we do this, you know, the video, the channel, Leaving Crazy Town. And it's so funny because Finn and I are always saying, as a solution, just pause. Because in the pause, so much happens. You don't have to react. You notice your bodily sensations. You can say, oh, this might be an activation. You can notice your thinking has now gone down a crazy train, you know, place. So it's just stopping, taking a deep breath, and then coming from that place without coming from a place of reactivity, like you just said. That's a really great tool too. And, you know, just remembering, and I know people, this is a hard one too, that your thoughts are just thoughts. And they're usually from the past. And don't be run by your thoughts. Sorry.
Yeah, you are not your thoughts. I think that for me has been the most powerful what I've gained most from meditation.
Awareness.
This self-awareness where it's like, huh, can you imagine if I was actually all of my thoughts? Oh my God.
Oh, I told this story on a show the other day that, you know, I went to California and did this podcast with this, it's a long story, but anyways, with this guy, a mental health podcast. And because of a bunch of different things that happened, I had to go to his house and like all this weird kind of strange stuff happened. At least I thought it was odd. And I do the podcast and I literally that night, I am like, I sounded psycho. Like I was so preoccupied. I was like, oh my God, I was obsessing about things I said and I was totally in a trauma reaction. And I said, I got to call him. I got to tell him not to put it out. Like I was so preoccupied. And for like a week after, I had to process it. I looked at what got activated. Like it was all these strange circumstances. But I had convinced myself that it was like one of the worst things I'd ever done. And it literally came out like a month later and it was fine. And But that experience was so powerful because my thinking and my feeling sensations were telling me complete lies based on the past. And if I had done any of that, if I had like called, even like, what do you, you know, when we react out of that insanity, that's where we set the ball rolling to, you know, more problems. So just having that spaciousness and awareness is so important, Megan. And knowing that, you know, maybe just hold off for a little while. It's always a good idea.
The yeah. power of the pause. Yeah.
The power of the pause, man. Yep.
The compassion, doesn't matter how successful, to what letter of leadership, you're going to have these moments where you're completely in self-doubt or in some sort
Absolutely.
Of rabbit hole from the past. That's probably not how you want to, you don't want to react from that point.
No. And it's just having more and more experiences. And this is what I teach women about boundaries. It's like, the thing is, yes, they're going to be hard to do at the beginning, but if you don't start doing them, they're never going to get easier. But once you start doing them, then you got that in your back pocket. Then you're going to do a harder one. Maybe the first time you're just going to say, can you put cream in my coffee when I asked you to or whatever. But eventually it's going to be the bigger and bigger conversations. And then you're not going to be able to not do it. And, you know, we could talk about being a mom forever, but I tell moms, if you can't set a boundary when your kid is 3, just wait till they're 16, okay? Because I'm telling you, you're going to be in big trouble. But it, when a kid is 3, they seem so, because of the energy, it feels so hard to do, and you lose perspective. So boundaries is a whole other conversation we can have another time, but it's really important too.
Yeah, let's do yeah. it. Let's do another
All episode. Right.
Thank you so much. This was
oh my great. God, this was so great. Thank you so much. It was great to chat.
Totally. I can't wait to chat more with you.
Absolutely. Thanks, my friend. Cheers.
Are you looking to surround yourself with like-minded women, be them leaders in the corporate sphere or other entrepreneurs that are interested in having a little bit of community, compassion, accountability, inspiration, motivation, wisdom around their own wellness journey? We're all about agency. We're all about less is more. Super fun monthly events, lots of tidbits of inspiration. Most content is shared via audio, so you can grab it and go as you're folding the laundry or commuting. And it's really just nice to have some place to check into when you're feeling like you need to carve a little bit more space for yourself. You need to up your ante slightly on your self-care, and you're just not sure what to focus on. It's a beautiful source of community, and I'm really excited to keep building it with you. So do reach out if you are interested in joining. I will also share the link in the show notes. Thanks so much for being here. Hey there, one last thing I wanted to share with you. If you're enjoying this podcast, it would mean so much to me if you could rate and review it on your favorite podcast platform. It really does help us grow the show. And this being so important to me to get this message out to more women to help them optimize their wellness and ultimately their lives, this is my mission, and I would greatly appreciate it if you could support the podcast by rating and reviewing. Thanks in advance. Have a good one.